How My Parents Kept My Heart, Even in My Teen Years, by Daniel Craig, recording 15504. This message was recorded live at the 2015 Oregon Christian Home Education Conference held in Portland, Oregon. The conference is sponsored annually by the Oregon Christian Home Education Association Network. For three decades, Ocean Network has been there to support and encourage homeschooling while defending and promoting homeschooling freedoms in our state capital. For more information about Ocean, for information about future conferences, and political information when the need arises, please sign up on our mailing list at oceanetwork.org. Ocean Network has been given limited copyright to this message so that it can sell it as a fundraiser to support our year-round efforts. Please honor the requests of the speaker and avoid unauthorized duplication or distribution.
Good morning. Thanks for taking the time to come to this session. Are you all having a good weekend so far? Yeah. I love being at homeschool conferences like this. I mentioned yesterday, my folks are involved with the Washington State organization, and it's a privilege to come to these events where you, even for mom and dad, they're done homeschooling all their kids, but they still are encouraged and refreshed by the teaching that they hear at these kinds of events. So grateful for the folks at Ocean who put this on. How many of you were at my session yesterday, Five Secrets for Aspiring Entrepreneurs? Okay, just a couple of you. The rest got scared off, which is unfortunate. But I just wanted to introduce myself by way of a story that I told yesterday because it ties into a specific point. Before I get to that, let me just mention briefly, I work with an organization called Life Launch. We're all about helping young homeschoolers make the jump from homeschool into life beyond. We've developed a curriculum called the Kickstart Curriculum, which I like to describe as a big kick in the pants for young people. And it essentially is all about helping young people define a vision for their life and pursue that vision through mentoring relationships and real life application. Here's a little bit of a picture of our family. We are now growing into the grandkid stage. Someone saw this picture at a convention recently, and they said to me, "Now, are all of those people your parents' kids?" I'm like, "Nope, we are not the Duggars. This is a different family." And we are now at the stage with 13 grandkids, and I love being an uncle, and hopefully, if all goes well after my marriage to this girl next Saturday, I'll be able to add to the pack of grandkids as well. So this is an exciting time for me, and it's a time in which I feel like I am experiencing many of the blessings of having parents who sacrificed of themselves and of their time and their energy to give me a discipleship and education and a start in life that I know many are not blessed to have. And I know those are the exact same sacrifices that you as parents are making day in and day out. So from one kid to some other parents, thank you for what you do. You don't need to know a lot about me other than the fact that, as I mentioned yesterday, I am the world's most obvious homeschooler. People just pick me out. I have a story to back this up. I was homeschooled all the way through high school. Never stepped foot in the classroom till my first class in college. At 20 years of age, we decided it was time for me to get some courses in music, so I went off to Eastern Washington University. And my first class was Music Theory 101. Hadn't been in the class but 10 minutes, 5 minutes actually. And this girl next to me starts looking at me like I had some sort of disease. And I thought to myself, I mean, please, would you stop? Look, if this is what college is all about, I'm moving on. And then all of a sudden, her face relaxes as if she diagnosed what my illness was. And she looks at me, she says, "Are you homeschooled?" And I thought to myself, come on, am I really that obvious? And what I should have known was the dead giveaway was the fact that sitting right beside me was none other than my mother. And only in a homeschool family do you have moms who care so much about your education that they actually come to college with you. And some of you are thinking, okay, that sounds like just a total control freak mom. Nah, if you met my mom, you would know that that's not the case. And she was there because we had a good relationship, not because she was worried that I was going to get into all sorts of trouble. As I thought about that circumstance, here's what I realized. I realized that the reason it was so weird to that girl for my mom to be in college with me was precisely the reason that it wasn't weird to me. Here's what I mean. The reason mom was there was because our goal as a family, mom and dad's goal in their discipleship, was to pass on their faith and their convictions to us as their children. I'm sure you all resonate with that, right? Well, did you know that it's the implicit, if not the explicit, purpose of many institutions of higher education to destroy that continuity? And so that's why it was totally weird for that girl to have my mom there. Because she's thinking, if you're going to college, you must be going to college because you're trying to set up beliefs apart from your parents. So what in the world is your mom doing here? But we had a different goal, and so that's essentially what was going on. And that was mom and dad's big priority. In fact, as I think back on their motivations for home education, look, we enjoyed the flexibility. We enjoyed the individualized learning. We enjoyed the opportunities for real life experience. But the number one thing that drove them, and believe me, I was not the world's most easy child to home educate. You know, look, I don't know what it is about boys, but we are not exactly the most motivated creatures in the world. And so this was not an easy process for mom and dad. And what drove them more than anything else was their desire to raise us in the fear and admonition of the Lord, the nurture and admonition of the Lord. And I know many of you have that as your goal. So what does that have to do with today's presentation? Well, I want to show you a chart. And this might be a little difficult for you to see, so I'll explain it. How many of you have heard of the Gen 2 survey that was done in the last couple of years? Okay, this is, to our knowledge, the largest spiritual survey done on the millennial generation. The researcher is a resident from right around here, Dr. Brian Ray. He's actually speaking here this weekend. And there's lots of interesting stuff that came out of the survey. It was largely focused on homeschoolers, and I know you've read the blogs and you've heard about all the homeschoolers that hate their homeschooling parents, but just so you know, the vast majority of homeschoolers love you guys, okay? So be encouraged. And most of us actually want to continue on with what you're doing. But one of the most interesting charts was this chart, and it basically compares inputs in a child's life, which you see here. My laser's not working, so let me use my mouse. What you see here on the right, if we can get this over here. Let's do this. Pointing always works. On the left, these are the inputs into a child's life, whether or not they have a strong relationship with their father, the nature of their relationship with their mother, whether or not they attended church at an early age or at an older age, whether or not they're homeschooled, Christian schooled, private schooled, or public schooled for 7 years or more. And then at the top, you have the outputs in adult life, their level of orthodoxy, their Christian behavior as adults, their Christian beliefs as adults, their satisfaction in life as adults, their civic community involvement, and then interestingly, the similarity with their father's beliefs and their mother's beliefs. And these ticks, these plus signs, represent strong correlations, positive strong correlations, and the minus signs, the dashes, represent negative correlations. The dots are really no correlation. Now, I'll get to my main point in a moment, but it is interesting to compare the difference between the input, the results of the input of home education and the results of the input of Christian schooling. There is a significant difference there if you look at this line compared to this line in the results. There's positive correlations with orthodoxy, Christian behaviors, Christian beliefs, satisfaction, involvement, similarity to fathers and mothers' beliefs for home education, and almost, with a couple exceptions, across the board, negative correlations. And the reason is because we homeschool, at least in our understanding, we homeschool not because this is just about presenting facts from a Christian worldview. We homeschool because this is the best way to form a relationship through which those Christian worldviews can be communicated. And what's missing in higher in Christian schools is the parental relationship. Now, what I wanted to draw your attention to was the top right corner, which is where you find the strongest correlations. And the strongest correlations on the chart show that where there's a strong relationship with one's father and one's mother, you have a very high likelihood, strong correlation to a similarity in beliefs with your father and your mother. Now, that's probably not shocking to any of you. Like, you thought, okay, that's what we would have thought. And what's the next question? The next question is obviously, okay, so then how do you form those relationships? And I don't know about you, but my mom and dad scratched their head over this one. Like, how do we connect with our children? How do we form those deep, loving, trusting, open relationships with our young kids, our teenagers, and even our 20-year-olds? Do any of you, like, does that resonate with any of you? Or do you all just have perfect relationships with your kids? Okay, then you can leave. But this was something we struggled at. This was difficult for us. And I've had the privilege of speaking with thousands of, hundreds, let me be a little more precise, hundreds of homeschool families over the last few years. And I realized that this is something that we were not the only family who struggled with this. Other families struggled with this as well. And that's what we're going to talk about. Unfortunately, to answer this question, you have me. But I'm not here as an education expert. I'm not here as a parenting expert. I'm here as a kid. And I'm going to tell you four things, four keys that I believe were fundamental in mom and dad's ability to retain our hearts as their children. Before we jump into that, we're going to open with a word of prayer. And before we even do that, let me just mention that if you're interested in getting a booklet of all the survey results on this Gen 2 home education survey, just put your name down here. We'll send you an electronic PDF with some other resources to get some commentary on those results as well. Let's open in a word of prayer. Heavenly Father, Lord, I stand back amazed at your mercy and grace in my life. You know that left to myself, I would pursue destruction. I would be bent on sin, and I would have a life far from you. But you were merciful to me, and you have been merciful to the children of these parents present here today, because you've given them parents who love and fear you. And I thank you for these parents. I thank you for my parents. Pray that this time would be beneficial and helpful, that I would speak as one who's experienced these things, and that they, as parents, would understand how these concepts might apply to their lives. Lord, we thank you for your work in our lives and what you're doing, and we ask that this session would be profitable to the advancement of your kingdom. Amen. So here is what I've noticed as I've talked with a bunch of different families and observed families and lived life in a home education home educating family, that there's essentially four relational factors that maybe are not the only factors, but are at least key factors in determining parent and child relationships. They are the factors of motivation. What is driving the parenting? What's the reason behind the home education? What's motivating the rules? Secondly, the leadership approach. How are children led? What is communicated in the leadership? What's the spirit of the leadership? What's the attitude of the leadership? Communication approach. What does communication between parents and children look like in a given family? Is it, well, we'll get to the options, but is it communication that's free-flowing, that's open, that's loving, that's caring? And finally, what kind of team spirit is there in these families? Is it a sense of, hey guys, we are all on the same team, heading the same direction? Or is it a sense of, kids, you are in a royal education experiment and you are specimens, and we don't really relate to you, but we do home education to you. It can actually feel that way sometimes. Mom comes home from the homeschooling convention with this stack of books, like, look, kids. And we're like, oh no. She just got inspired. Look out. But don't worry, give her 2 weeks. She'll be all right. No, just kidding. I'm just kidding. Kind of. And what I've noticed is in families where there's weak relationships, that these factors play out in by and large in some generally consistent ways. And the first way is that the motivation, in many cases, perhaps the majority of cases where you find weak relationships between parents and children, the motivation is the right externals. Hear me on this. If you've talked to many homeschool families, there is a common theme, and that is this. And it's a wonderful thing. Many families begin to homeschool because the Smiths meet the Joneses. And the Smith parents meet the Joneses' kids. And they go, oh my goodness, we want our kids to turn out like the Joneses. Right? And so what do? They say, well, what do the Joneses do to the Joneses' kids? They homeschool them. And they say, so we're going to homeschool. And there's something very wonderful about that because it's an example that speaks a message. But what often happens then is that these parents are so focused on getting their kids to turn out like the Joneses that parenting becomes all about doing all the external things that the Joneses do so that they can get their kids to look like all the external qualities that the Jones kids demonstrate. You know what I'm talking about, right? And that for us as kids is paralyzing. And I'll explain why. So weak relationships come as often a result of a motivation of right external. Secondly, a leadership approach that's authoritarian. And this is basically, kids, the only thing that matters is that you understand what I want you to do. Because after all, what we're after here is right externals. So you don't need to know the heart behind what I'm communicating. You don't need to have a relationship with me. All you need to do is what I say. That's all that matters so that we can get these right externals. Have you seen this? And that leads to a communication approach that's essentially one way. Because all that's needed is one-way communication between parents and children such that the parents hear, or rather the children hear directly from the parents exactly what the right externals are. And the only other kind of communication that happens is parent to child again when the kids are messing up the right externals. But going the other way, child to parent, often doesn't happen. And that leads to essentially no team spirit where, like I mentioned, the kids have the sense that what's going on here is not something that we're pursuing together, not a mission, a mutual common vision for the glory of God, but this is something that mom and dad are doing to us so that we produce the right externals. And after 30 years in the homeschool movement, around for which I've been around for 26, I think you can see what I'm talking about. Where you have homeschool families who are totally burned out, kids that look like they were going to be the world changers of the next generation, they go off the deep end because there was no relationship. And look, we have some major issues in our family. And so I don't share what I'm about to share with any sense of, hey, we've got it together. In fact, I have my dad's permission to share this, but he actually struggles with sinning from time to time. And so does my mom. And so do we as the kids. So we think it's genetic. But we are messed up, and yet the grace of God has been abundant toward us. And it's been abundant in these ways. And that's what I want to share is the testimony of what God has done in our family to bring about, by his grace, some strong relationships. I'm the youngest of five. All of us desire to love and serve the Lord and be faithful to the heritage that we've received from our parents. And I believe it's for four main reasons. Number one, mom and dad had a motivation of genuine love. And this love was of several different types. You might be thinking that it's primarily the love that they had toward us. But actually, it was primarily the love, first of all and foremost, the love that they had toward God. And at the risk of sounding completely cliche, I have to make that point. Because, again, what makes the difference between a motivation externals and a motivation of love is who is this really all about? Is it about the parents' reputation? Is it about the parents looking good? Or is it about the glory of our Lord Jesus Christ? And we picked up on that because mom and dad were primarily focused on their love for God. In preparing this talk, I call up my brother Stephen, who's the third born. We affectionately call him the third born brother. But anyways, I called Stephen up and I said, you know, we all love God, and I'm supposed to give this talk on how that happened. Please help. And he said, you know, Danny, I used to think that it was the accountability. It was the training. It was the discipline. It was the home education. But here's what I've come to conclude. At the end of the day, what it really was is the reason we love God is because we saw a real, vibrant, life-transforming love for God in our parents. A real, vibrant, life-transforming love for God. He says, I think oftentimes the reason this love for God doesn't go to the next generation is because it wasn't in the first generation. In fact, I was talking with Reb Bradley. How many of you know the name Reb Bradley? He's, you know, homeschool speaker, been around the movement for a while. And I was talking with him just a few weeks ago or a couple months ago at a conference. And he says, you know, Danny, at the end of the day, parents can't give what they don't have. Parents can't give what they don't have. So this love for God that mom and dad had was essential. Sometimes this love for God doesn't get passed on because of hypocrisy. And look, I want to be really, I hope you hear my heart. I'm sharing things as a kid. I'm not pointing fingers, but I'm going to speak to some things I've observed. Sometimes this hypocrisy is the kind of hypocrisy that we pick up when we see exactly what's behind the parenting. In other words, when we tick you off, how do you respond? When we tick you off and you respond in anger and frustration, what that communicates to us is what mom and dad are really focused on is their own personal convenience and ease and not necessarily sacrificing themselves for the Lord. So we pick up on those things as it relates to the motivation in parenting. It becomes, if you will, a do as I say, not as I do type of experience. And we pick up on that. We know what makes you happy and sad and where you're getting your fulfillment, joy, and meaning in life. Is it from the Lord or from something else? I mean, we read these things really well. But I wanted to give you a few practical ways that mom and dad demonstrated this genuine love for God. First of all, they modeled an appealing relationship with God. And I think this is so crucial. You see some families and the parents live such joyful and happy and God-oriented lives. And then you look at the kids and they resemble that joy. And then in other cases, you see parents who seem to live lives that are characterized either by worry or anger or frustration or disappointment or grief or sadness or whatever it is. And I realize that as adults, you go through many difficult things. But at the end of the day, we see the difference between those two kind of approaches to a relationship with God. And when the relationship with God that's modeled is not appealing to us, when we can't say, I want that, then it's very hard for us to want your faith. We also knew they loved God because they were transparent. We could see them walking with God. This is huge. Because oftentimes, you might think as parents that you have to present to us this front of, look, I have it all together. You know, me and God are, you know, A-okay and have been from the beginning of time. And I don't struggle with any of these things that it looks like I'm struggling with. But we see that stuff. And what's more meaningful to us is when you're transparent about your weaknesses and the things that you struggle with. Because then we can see the power of God made manifest in your weakness. Does that make sense? The transparency is huge. Kids, I'm flat out discouraged today. And I read this in Psalm 121. And I just want you to know that I'm asking the Lord to give me the joy of his salvation that I don't have right now. And let's pray that the Lord would give this joy to all of us right now. That's discipleship. transparent discipleship, where we see the grace and power of God appropriated to your lives, and we say, that's what I want. We also knew Mom and Dad loved God because they did something about it. I love this aspect of my parents. It wasn't just talk, you know. Hey, we're the Christian family, and when we talk about Christianity, we tell others about Christianity, but we don't do anything about Christianity. I mean, we did quite a bit. When we were young, Mom and Dad would have us go to the nursing homes because they wanted us to be a blessing to the elderly people in those nursing homes. Dad was, okay, I'll be honest, struggled at consistency in devotions. But he'd made it happen. And we knew that when he led us in family worship, it wasn't because he was trying to do, you know, this Mr. Spiritual Leader trip. You know, oh, kids, you know, I'm more holy than thou, and so let's sit around and hear me speak. It wasn't like that. We knew, because it was hard for him, and because we could see the fact that he had to work at it, we knew that he was doing it because he wanted us to love God, and he wanted us to live pure and undefiled lives in this world. And so that's why he was teaching us the things of God. Another way that they did something about it was pretty drastic, and I realize this isn't going to happen for many of you, but when we were five, we got an opportunity to move to Russia and work in a Russian orphanage. And I'll tell you a little bit more about this at the end of the talk, but when your parents give up all of their American conveniences and move to another country, which Russia was in 1994, literally, I mean, very much the sense of a third world country. I mean, the wall had just come down, and this was not a fun place to be. Working with kids who are many criminals and treat you as such, you realize, wow, this faith that Mom and Dad have is real. They're willing to do something about it. They're willing to sacrifice. They are willing to take up the cross and follow Jesus. This is real. I better not overlook this. We see the reality when they did something about it. So they love God. And I'll dwell on the second point, but briefly. They loved each other. I'm no marriage counselor. I'm going through marriage counseling. But I can tell you this, that a strong, unified, loving relationship between a wife and a husband has such an incredible effect on the security or insecurity of the children in that home. Where there's not a unified common vision, we get, you know, a billion mixed messages a day. And we end up wondering, what is life all about? Because Mom's saying one thing and Dad's saying another thing. And I'm talking about the smallest types of things. I mean, you know how it goes as young children. We can, you know, pick up on disunity or not being on the same page between Mom and Dad just as easily as you know, eating a slice of cherry pie. You know, Dad, can I have this piece? Mom, can I have this piece of candy? No. Dad, can I have this piece of candy? You know, oh, I guess so. And then we pick up on that. We do that as young kids. We exploit that. And then what happens when we get 10 years older in our teens, we just play the same game at an entirely different level. Totally different level, life-changing level. And this, again, can have disastrous consequences. Mom was talking with a family recently wherein the wife and the husband and the wife were simply not on the same page about some key issues. And in this particular case, their daughter, who was a young teenager, I think she was like 15 or 16, was taking classes at the community college, and she was pretty in-depth in this relationship with this boy. I think she was driving back and forth from school with this boy. Mom was not excited about it. Dad was ambivalent. And where's the daughter left? She gets to forge her own way without the direction that she needs, not only at one of the most essential parts of her life, but over one of the most essential areas of her life. And I hate to think of the consequences of this. So, again, as a child, I can say that in many cases, the ability of parents to have a strong, unified vision is what affects us powerfully in having a strong vision for our own lives. And then my main point on this motivation is that they loved us. This is number three. They loved us. And yeah, they loved us by training us, by teaching us, by discipling us, by home educating us, by working with us, doing all these things with us. But the biggest way we knew they loved us was the way that they proactively pursued relationship with us. This was like A1 priority. We are all about relationship with our kids. And I'm going to give you some different ways that they demonstrated that. But the reason relationships were important was because, back to this issue of how do parents pass on the faith to their kids. Again, what mom and dad realized was we want to pass on our faith, but we know we're not going to be able to pass it through a void. And as I have to be honest, what I see in many cases is parents trying to beat the propositions of the Christian worldview into their kids. But there's no relationship through which those beliefs can be channeled, through which those beliefs can be communicated. And when the relationship's not there, the communication simply doesn't happen. And, obviously, this is not just one-sided. Obviously, we struggle against the relationship with our parents as well as kids, and I freely admit that. But one of the verses that's interesting to me is Proverbs 2, Solomon basically says, "My son, if you hearken to my words, if you listen to my instructions, if you pursue wisdom and knowledge and do all these different things," and then three verses later, after the end of the parenthetical statement, he says, "then you will find the knowledge of God." And essentially what he's saying is, if you look at it in context, if you listen to my words, then you will find the knowledge of God. So we often think, sometimes as kids and sometimes as parents, that this is about kids having their direct relationship with Jesus. Well, as it turns out, the way God designed it to work is that we come to develop a relationship with the Lord Jesus Christ through a strong relationship with our parents. And that's what you find in Proverbs chapter 2. So that's why mom believed it was so important. In the passing on of their convictions and their beliefs, and also in trying to get us to demonstrate the right externals, it made such a huge difference. Let me give you an example of this, because I don't want you to hear me saying that the right externals were not important to mom and dad. In fact, if you met mom and dad and if you knew our family, there's probably not too many families that are right of us, okay? We tend to be on the conservative end of the spectrum. Externals were important. But here's what made all the difference. I mentioned this story just briefly, but one day, Stephen and David came to mom and dad and they said, we've been discussing amongst ourselves the deficiencies of your parenting. And we've concluded that after the research, the findings of this noble council have concluded that we simply work too much and don't have enough play. Now, frankly, we did work a lot, okay? We did work a lot, which was good. We loved it. But we did work a lot, and I think Steve and David were like, man, this is one time we want to look back at the Smith kids and say, man, the Smith kids do have more playtime than us, so can we be a little bit more like the Smith kids? But they came to mom and dad and said, we work too much, don't have enough playtime. Mom and dad said, thank you for enlightening us to the deficiencies of our parenting. Yeah, not so much. They said, yeah, we agree there's a problem. The problem is you just don't appreciate the playtime that you have. And so here's a nice little solution. The next week it's all work and no play. And you'll learn to appreciate your playtime. And that might seem to some of you like this hard, externalistic, authoritarian approach to training. But it wasn't that way at all. Because we knew that what was behind that strict enforcement of the right external, which was diligence and motivation and love for work, was the relationship that we had and the love that they had for us that was motivating that kind of strictness. Does that make sense? I could give you other examples. When I was five, between the ages of 4 and 5, mom was really on my case about training me to work hard. And so my task at 5 years of age was to wash all the dishes for the breakfast while the other kids went down and did homeschooling. And I had to do it by myself, and I had to do it in 30 minutes or else. And I think you know what or else means. I knew what or else means. And done meant the rack had to be put away under the sink, the counter had to be dry, and all the dishes had to be away. And I think there was more mercy than strict justice on that one. But there was some strict justice a couple of times when I dawdled and did not make the 30-minute timer. And you might say, okay, some parents and many, you know, parenting experts today would say, oh, that's just harsh and it's going to put a fear of work into your children. Not really. Not at all. We knew why they were doing it. They loved us and they knew what they could expect of us. And now 20 years later, I'm grateful because they were absolutely right. High expectations yielded the blessing of loving work. So that is the big overall. But I wanted to give a couple of specifics of how they loved us. And in many cases, what I've seen is that the reason there's not a strong relationship between parents and children is because at the end of the day, and I'm sure this is not true of any of you, at the end of the day, in many cases, the parents are just not that nice to be with. In these homes, the dads are grumpy, irritable, frustrated, disconnected, unapproachable. Can't relate to them. And I've seen this, and it destroys the relationships. In these homes, often the moms are moody. They're not characterized by joy. They're characterized by worry and frustration. And that's hard for us to relate to and be excited about relating to as kids. And don't hear me as if I'm saying that mom and dad didn't struggle with any of those things. But they did, and that's the point. They struggled against them. They worked against them. And we saw that. And we knew that what characterized them overall was a delight in us. And that leads me to my next point, which is that mom and dad totally delighted in us. Now, I can say beyond the shadow of a doubt that for dad, after his love for his wife, he loved us as his children. What was more important to him than his job, than his possessions, than his ease, than anything in the world was how his kids turned out and the legacy that he produced in his kids. That is honestly what drove him. And what that produced was a delight in us where he desired to be with us, desired to invest in us. And a few years ago, he gets a call from a friend that we had known when we lived in Nebraska. This guy's name was Robert. And Robert calls Dad up and says, hey, Dad, I need some help with my second oldest daughter. We're disconnected. She's not connecting with me. I can't relate to her. I'm losing her. She's falling in love with movie actresses she's never met. I didn't know that could happen, but it can. And Dad says, okay, I'm sorry to hear that. Let me ask you though, do you enjoy and delight in being with your kids? And Robert says, I love my wife. I enjoy my wife, and I'm fine with being with my kids, but I've never thought of enjoying or delighting in their presence and in my relationship with them. And Dad said, well, Robert, I think that's where you need to start. A couple months later, Robert calls Dad up and says, Neil, the last couple of months, I've just focused on enjoying and delighting in my kids, and you would not believe the difference it has made. I have now a connection with my daughter. I now have a relationship with my daughter. There's something between us. And for the first time in a long time, we actually enjoy being together. And there's so many important aspects of parenting, I realize. But I think this is, hey, do you have fun with your kids? Mom and Dad had fun with us. They delighted us in us. And that made a huge difference. And back to the point of passing on the faith. It's interesting, but I think the scriptures bear this out, but that as children, and I'll speak particularly of fathers, our perception of God as our father can be very affected by our perception of our earthly fathers, where we perceive our earthly fathers as harsh, vindictive, irritable, and grumpy. Our tendency is going to be to view God that way. But where we perceive our fathers as loving, compassionate, tender, disciplining, but disciplining with love and care, then we begin to perceive God that way. And we say, if God is anything like my earthly father, then I want to serve this God. As I wrap up this first point of genuine love, I just want to give you an illustration of the kind of delight that Dad would show in us. This is actually just last year. I was pursuing basically another relationship that I had been pursuing came to a close, and I had a conversation with this girl's father that wasn't particularly easy. And after we got off the call, my dad sends me this email. And he writes, "Dear Danny, you are, in caps, an outstanding young man. I'm not saying this in a fleeting moment of emotion. You manifested this so very strongly in various ways during the conversation with his father. But what is so wonderful is that it continues to be manifested in your daily life. God is doing a marvelous thing, and I can hardly wait to see more. I'm committed to continue to pray much for you in this area until he brings her into your life to the point of marriage. I can't tell you how proud I am of you, Danny, and how grateful I am for you. By God's grace, he will continue to perform his work and will in your life. What more could we want? I hope you sense my deep love for you, Dad." You get an email like that from your dad, and you will rock over broken glass to get another one. That kind of love and delight affects us so powerfully. And it's not because we were always the most delightful to be with. Honestly, I was quite a pain in the neck. But they loved us nonetheless and brought us to a point of fellowship with them. Before I move on to my next point, I realize that I forgot to plug in my computer, so better do that. The next point has to do with the leadership style that we talked about. And in comparison to the authoritarian leadership approach that I mentioned before, Mom and Dad demonstrated an approach to leadership that was characterized by holy boldness. And here's what I mean by this. One of the things that I appreciated about my parents was their keen ability to perceive influences that could take us down the wrong road. And they really picked up on stuff. You might not agree with some of the calls that they made, and they made some strict ones. But we knew that at the end of the day, the reason and the motivation behind those calls was because they viewed God as a righteous and holy God. And they wanted us to be righteous and holy as well. And so they were willing to take steps. One day, when Tim and Annalisa, my oldest siblings, were young, Dad decides to check in on their youth group experience. And literally, as he's walking into youth group that Sunday, the youth pastor pulls his jacket up over his head and says, "Kids, today we're going to talk about sex." And Dad's like, "Oh, no, you're not, with my kids in the room." And that was just the kind of thing that Dad would say, "You know what, this is not the best environment for my kids." And here was the guiding principle. Mom and Dad believed that we as their kids should spend the most time with the people who knew us the best and loved us the most. Not the peers that we felt we needed. Not all the other cultural experiences that we thought would be so fun. But the time that they knew they needed to have with us to understand where our hearts were and to perceive the influences that were coming upon us and the appetites that were beginning to manifest themselves in our lives. And here's what I mean by that. Many times, I hear about the kids, the families who have rebellious teenagers, and some people come and ask me, did you have that rebellious teenage time? And I can say no, but the reason was I actually, my kind of turning point of really resisting Mom and Dad's authority actually happened around age 11. And in many ways, it wasn't that big of a deal. I mean, it wasn't like I was running away or trying to do drugs or doing really anything that bad. It was just basic, "I don't want to do what you want me to do," with a happy smile. And because Mom and Dad were around, because I was spending time with them, they picked up on that like this. and they nailed it hard with love. And as a result, what could have grown over 5 years into a major issue of rebellion was dealt with in a matter of about 3 months, where my life was just not fun. You know, Proverbs says the way of a transgressor is hard, and I'm telling you, mine was hard. But the reason they made it hard was because they picked up on the issue. And the reason they picked up on the issue is because they were spending so much time with us. They were in tune to our hearts. And so that brings me to this point, which is, as parents and as a child, I can not overestimate the importance of you paying attention to the development of the appetites of us as your children. Appetites at young ages are so crucial, because the appetites that we form at young ages determine what we feed ourselves for the rest of our lives. And what we feed ourselves for the rest of our lives determines the people who we turn out to be. And so mom and dad were really involved in leading us in developing important appetites in the areas of things like work. Hey, do the Craigs like work or not? And do we perceive work as a joyful, productive, exciting thing to do, or as drudgery? And they would let us, they led us in forming an appetite for work. Things like video games. Honestly, it's not like we had a hard and fast rule. We never play video games, but we basically didn't. And I look back 20 years later and I think to myself, I know that if I had gotten into video games at 10 years of age, I'd be a total addict now. And I'm glad I'm not an addict. And it's not even that much of a battle for me, because mom and dad formed those appetites at a young age. Does that make sense? Formed appetites in the areas of reading tastes, the kind of clothes that we wanted to wear, kinds of music we wanted to listen to, the kind of people, this was important, the kind of people we would spend our time with. They put us around adults. They taught us to ask questions of adults so that we got an appetite for manly and womanly type of conversations, not peer-dominated conversations that were caught up with the fluff of being cool. And yet, as I say all of this, they were not protecting us in a way that was reclusive. And a lot of people hear about protection and sheltering, and there's a lot of concern about, you know, the overprotection that goes on in the homeschooling movement. But here's mom and dad's view of protection. Protection for them was so that they could bring us into an environment in which they could prepare us. And the motivation behind preparation was so that we would go back and penetrate into the world as distinct from the world. So in other words, they knew for us, in order for us to be those kind of people who influence the world, we had to be different from the world, and that was the motivation behind the protection. So the protection brought us out of the world so that we could then be prepared apart from the world to go back and penetrate the world as a salty influence for the glory of God. So that was their leadership approach. And I just have to mention this. In response to all the cries of abuse and legalism in the homeschool movement, of which there are quite a few right now, because there's a lot of homeschool families, some more conservative than others, that you know, made rules and standards and convictions for their children, many of whom are now upset because of those. And lest you think that it's because of the rules and the convictions themselves, I want to offer a different perspective. My perspective is that the issue is not so much how well these parents nailed the standards and convictions, whether they were just the perfect application of the Word of God, or whether it was just a little too strict or a little too loose. That wasn't so much the issue. The issue was whether or not there was a relationship to give meaning and context and purpose and significance to the rules. Yeah, if I told you some of the rules that we had in our family, you'd probably be like, wow, that's kind of weird. Maybe. But we didn't really perceive it as weird, because even if mom and dad got it wrong, we knew that the reason they were attempting it was because they loved us. Here's an example. About 15 years ago, dad came to us and said, hey, look, I'm responsible for protecting you guys from unhelpful media influences. Before you watch a movie, come and check with me. And that was pretty much of a rule. We didn't watch movies without talking to Dad. Well, 15 years later, I'm 26, and I'm still living at home, and my brother, who's a little bit older than me, is actually still at home, and we still check with Dad before we watch a movie. Not because we grew up thinking that there was this legalistic interpretation of God's word that said, thou shalt not watch a movie without asking thy father's permission, is the 11th commandment. We didn't think that. And it didn't need to be. We just knew this is something Mom and Dad are doing to help us because they love us. It wasn't legalism to us. It was love. So oftentimes you read the writings of these people who are so upset about legalism, I believe they're misdiagnosing what the issue was. Thirdly, communication. This one cracks me up because we're kind of a piece of work in this area. We really pursued communication, and we did so with not a lot of skill and tact quality communication sometimes wasn't the kind of communication, but at least there was communication. And the basic idea was, hey, we work through conflict. We work through conflict all the way to the end, to the point that you can get up and hug each other with true love. And that meant that sometimes we had 3 to 4 hour conflict resolution sessions. And I wish I could tell you that this was a thing of the past. But just this week, Mom and I just, sure none of you can relate to that with your teenage sons. Try it on a 26-year-old. It can be rough. But we actually had, three conversations last week, or this week actually, that were between, an hour and 2 hours long, trying to work through this. And I messed up a lot. Maybe she messed up a little. But we worked at it. And the basic difference here is that the communication with Mom and Dad was not one way. It was two way. And they heard us. They heard us. They actually wanted to hear our perspective. It's amazing to me, some parents who want their kids to be able to communicate and think biblically treat their kids in the home as if their kids could never have anything meaningful or significant to say because they don't listen to them. And on the other hand, in our experience, because Mom and Dad listened to us so much, it called up within us more mature communication, the desire to think and communicate more biblically because it actually had significance with them. I talked to my mom, and she gave me just a few practical aspects of how she tried to facilitate this communication in our home. And I'll just mention a few of them. First one was be available. And in my experience, this is huge because I can remember those specific times where you want to open up a little bit, and yet it's hard to get over the hump. It's hard to just say, I want to talk to you, Mom. And so literally, this is what would happen. I would kind of like walk into the kitchen where I knew Mom was and kind of put the slightly mopey look on my face just so she would notice me. And she would be like, are you okay, Danny? And I'd be like, oh, I'm so glad you asked. Because no, I'm not, as a matter of fact. And okay, maybe that was slightly manipulative. But the point was, she was available for us. And where many parents would have just been like, oh, he's having a bad day, ignore him. She would pick up on it, and she would try to open us up about it. She was available for us. Here's another one. Be interested in what they are thinking about and in their world. Again, many parents want their kids to open up to them about their, desires for romance or, their interest in this girl or interest in that boy. But at the end of the day, for many years leading up to this time where you want this deep communication, we've felt that you actually weren't that interested in what we had to say. Another one, which is, this is the third one and last one, which is probably the most critical, be open to criticism. We must, as children, listen to parental instruction, absolutely. But it is hard for us to listen when we feel as if we would not be listened to if we had some criticism for our parents. This makes such a huge difference. A mom and dad opening themselves up humbly and honestly to criticism from us that had to be presented respectfully and honorably, yes. But opening themselves up to criticism made us want to open ourselves up to them. It was huge. Motivation was genuine love. The leadership style was holy boldness. Communication approach was two-way. And finally, the team spirit was that of something that they were doing with us. All of these factors led to, in our home, this wonderful, exciting, thrilling, joyful, pervasive sense of we are on a mission and we are going somewhere and it's awesome. And that was how we felt about life. We're a team at work. We're a team at play. We're a team at ministry. Mom, I'll go through each of those. Mom would make work fun. Okay, guys, we're going to weed the garden, and first one to 100 wins, and then we're gonna go play 10 minutes of four square. After which we do another 100 weeds, and this is gonna be such a cool afternoon. And we're like, okay, doesn't sound like it, but I'll take your word for it. And so there was this team aspect about work. And then about play, dad would take the time, even if he was tired from a day of work, to go out after dinner and play a game of foursquare with us. Oftentimes people ask me, what do you think about team sports? And frankly, we never did team sports. And I think the reason why was we just had too much of a blast as our own team. And we were good. We could take all of you. Just kidding. It's like, why would I want to go be on that team? Our team rocks, So there's a sense of team in our play as well. We weren't all going off doing our separate hobbies for the most part. And then finally, and perhaps importantly, most importantly, ministry. Here's a key point. If you want your kids to stay on your ship better be going somewhere. If you want your kids to stay on your ship better be going somewhere. I talked to people here this weekend, and this girl, you can just kind of get the sense of, hey, I'm at home a bunch, and life's kind of boring, and I'm looking to the world for the good life, and do you have any advice for me? And I just get the sense that the ship in their family needs to have a little bit more movement. And it was such for us that when we went to work with these orphans or when we went to the nursing home, it was a sense of mission and serving God together. After our time in Russia, my oldest brother commented to Mom and Dad, and you wouldn't believe this statement if you knew the circumstances under which we worked, but commented to Mom and Dad, I want to work with Russian orphans for the rest of my life. So the team spirit makes a huge difference. Before I get to my closing points, I'll just add one other thing, and that is that Mom and Dad did not separate their life mission from the team that God gave them to accomplish that mission, which they believed included their children. A lot of parents I've noticed have a life mission that seems to be something that's different from what their kids can be involved in. We've got what Mom and Dad do on the side, and that's what Mom and Dad do, and then we've got our family, and that's another thing. But Mom and Dad said, here's our mission, and here's our team, you're part of the team, here we go. And that made a huge difference. I'm going to close with this thought. If you want the survey information, just get your name on the clipboard. And then I encourage you to come by our booth and check out this Kickstart curriculum. I think I mentioned this briefly, but it's all about helping students launch into life with clear vision through mentoring relationships and real life application. Here's a basic worldview curriculum. What does the Bible say about that? Here's if you're trying to navigate the issues of culture with your children, what would the real Jesus do with pop culture? And then this is an important book on literature and literature that you might or might not be using in your homeschool curriculum. What is going on with it? What's the worldview being espoused? I want to go back to where we started, and that is this. Many parents are asking themselves, how can we pass on the faith to our kids? And I realize that some of you might be tired, discouraged, worn out, dealing with the resistant child. You've been dealing with this for months. You're not making progress. Maybe it's the child with learning disabilities or whatever it might be. And you might be saying, okay, I see the Joneses and they seem to have it all together. But we don't have it all together. What is the meaning and significance behind these difficulties that we're having in our homeschool family? And I want to just encourage you with this thought. Friends, I believe that God gives us these moments of weakness so that He can shine through us. And that even as your kids see you struggling, whether it's you as a dad, you're struggling with, you know, how do I connect with my kids? How do I get involved in homeschooling? Or you as a mom, how do I manage all of this? Again, when you're weak, we can see God's strength. And I'll give you three closing illustrations of this with my dad. If you met my dad, you would not think to yourself that this is the most flashy, dynamic leadership personality that you had ever met. He's actually a rather quiet man. He's a dignified man, but he's a quiet man. And I've learned a few important lessons from my dad. One of those is the lesson of sacrifice. I alluded to this briefly, but when dad gave up what he had where we were living in Nebraska, a nice home, nice circumstances, ease, to go work with kids who were literally, you know, biting, kicking, and screaming at him the first day on the job, I could see that he was willing to take up his cross and follow Jesus because of how Jesus had taken up a cross for him. And that sacrifice that I saw in my dad gave me the sense that, wow, this God is worthy to be served. Another thing I learned was that of how to walk with God. Just this year, Dad is the executive director of the Washington State Homeschool Organization. And this is the hardest conference for him that we had in April. It was just, you know, things were going wrong. People were bowing out, just a lot of different stuff. And yet, I noticed that Dad was more faith-filled than he had been in any other year. I could see more of a consistent joy in trusting in the Lord. Turns out, a few weeks later, he was sharing with us about this. And he said, you know, here's actually the scripture that I had gone back to many times during those weeks leading up to the conference. And I knew, first of all, that God was watching me. But the reason I wanted so badly to handle this trial well was because I knew the three of you were watching me. And we noticed that. Thirdly, I've noticed about my dad something of commitment. Dad's 72. And at a time when most people his age are either putting golf balls or pushing daisies, he is committed to the cause of Jesus Christ. He's still cranking out another homeschool conference because he wants to meet the needs of all of those families. He loves God, and he is committed. And as I think about these qualities in my dad, there's one thing that forces itself upon my mind, one irresistible conclusion, and that's this. When I grow up someday, I want to be like my dad. Because he demonstrated genuine love, led us with holy boldness, fostered two-way communication, led with the team spirit. And I think it's because of all of those things that this child has given his heart to his parents. I hope that's helpful. Thanks.
This message was recorded at the 2015 Oregon Christian Home Education Conference. Ocean Network, its activities, and its information can be found on the web at oceanetwork.org.